Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 27th, 2019. Today we're joined by author, educator, and climate hawk, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Ms. Mariah Tinger?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing good. Very well. So this past week was the third annual Women's March, which I was able to get myself to on Boston Common. It was interesting. I was poking around. Of course, I had my little audio tape recorder in hopes of recording interesting conversations with people, but my introverted nature kept me from talking to anyone. In fact, it was kind of cold. So
introverts. You're an introvert? I don't believe it.
I'm very brave when I'm in a room by myself. Anyway, it's I looked around. I saw a sign. Because all kinds of signs, very funny signs, and of course it was a woman's march, right? So very interesting, intelligent signs. But there was one sign that said, "Climate change is an issue that has a feminist perspective," or something like that. And I said, "Okay." I tried to work my way through the crowd to get to see that sign because it was like across several thousand people. And by the time I get over there, I think everything had shifted, and I never actually caught up with the person. So. But then on the train ride back in, I Googled on my phone something that I'm kind of aware of anyway. But we should note that the UN and various kinds of studies have pointed out that climate change disproportionately affects women. In particular, it disproportionately affects women who are in poor countries where the problem's going to hit first because women have to deal, for better or worse, okay, in those countries. They're the food providers. They are everything, right? They have to get the water. They have to get the food. As the conditions change, the burden falls on them. And that is a inherent problem, justice problem. And that what they're saying is that women need to be allowed into in these countries and everywhere, of course, participating in the discussion about what to do about climate change because they bring a perspective that geeky white guys don't have, right? They're focused on things like where are we going to get get food and water, and that's a perspective that is important to include in the conversation. So, for fear of saying something that marks me as being unaware, right, unconscious, I just think it's important to note that. The Women's March does have a climate perspective that should be considered. We all ought to at least be aware that this is an important issue, right?
Yeah, this is a bit of a pivot, but I think that health effects in general from climate change hit children and elderly the most, and a lot of people who are in caregiving positions are probably going to see that in high levels. And, there's On Point did a fantastic hour-long segment interviewing several doctors who said, look, this is climate. The doctors in our profession are already seeing climate change affecting people's health. We are seeing it every day in rising numbers. And it's from in everything from, the heat exhaustion, heat stroke, different problems like that, to the, labor productivity going down, right? People don't work as hard when it's hot, and people get aggressive, more aggressive during heat waves. And of course, there's the, diseases, vector-borne diseases that you get from sort of the Lyme disease and increases in
Eastern equine encephalitis. There you go.
West Nile, All of these things are all problems that the doctors are having to deal with in a greater effect. And these doctors were saying that that they should band together and really start making a lot of noise about climate change being a health issue that needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. And one said that the image of climate change should be a child with asthma struggling to breathe. That's something that is a problem people are facing every single day. And doctors need to talk about that. They need to be really big on that.
Should we? I mean, maybe you can do it. I can do it. But what is the asthma connection to climate change? I mean, it's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the hotter weather engendered by climate drives chemical reactions, smog, right? These nitrous oxide things. So this is the interaction of the hotter weather with gasoline pollution, and that's what irritates kids' lungs. So on the hot, smoggy days, you get more asthma attacks, right? Isn't that the logic?
Yeah, that's the fine particulates, right? The PM25s, I think they are, that are super, they come from black soot. They're super, super tiny, super fine, little pieces of black carbon, and they go really deep in your lungs and do a lot of damage. And, you know, the, like you said, the hotter the air, the more they're sort of, I don't know what the word is, aerosolized. I don't know if that's quite right, but.
Well, I mean, but the small, these nitrous, you hear the other thing I've heard is nitrous oxide, so NOX.
Yeah,
so
the NOX,
big
the
N, nitrogen, N for nitrogen, O for oxygen, little X for how many oxygens, so like NO1, NO2, NO3. Those oxide, the NOXes, are also part of the smog that irritates people's lungs. Isn't that true?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that in general, the air pollution, I think it's something like, is it like, I used to have the numbers on this, but it's like 8 million people die prematurely due to air pollution from climate change.
Right, right.
And that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people, right? That's pretty sad. And the doctors that were speaking in this On Point show said that climate is harming our health and that climate solutions will benefit our health, right? So if we start addressing climate change, it's a dual benefit. We get rid of the problems we have from climate change, which is warming the planet, and we also help solve, you know, health problems. And I think that the climate impacts to health are actually at the point where they're reversing the gains we've made in health with the new technologies.
There's a synergy there, right? I mean, it's you get the benefit of the green energy, but you also avoid all these costs of healthcare that come from the pollution. I mean, it's a double win. And I agree with you.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah. That was on Point. We can put up a link to that show, right? And it wasn't Physicians for Social Responsibility. I know they're.
They mentioned that. Yeah, the woman who was on the show. I should have her name, but the woman who was on the show she is part of that physicians group.
Right.
And she said, you know, that's what we need: more voices who are getting together and really talking out about this.
Right. So I guess the other interesting thing, though, one of the most common topics of discussion in climate world, I guess, is how to put a price on carbon, right? How to impose some sort of financial cost for carbon pollution. In the dream, in the myth that somehow the market, by putting the penalty on the pollution, that's the method by which we'll most easily control carbon pollution, as opposed to saying, oh, it's the morally right thing to do to use less carbon, right? No one really wants to hear about that. We want to put a price on carbon. So tell me, Mariah, what interesting twist of information came down this week about carbon prices and economists?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, to connect it back to the health issue, certainly, if you know, a lot of what makes fossil fuels, quote unquote, affordable is that the externalities are not incorporated into them, right? You're not taking into account the damage to health, the price, the amount of money it costs, you know, that damage to health costs, and the amount of money the damage to the environment is costing us. So,
and that's what you mean by externality, which is a very funny word. And if you don't, I mean, it's those other things that you're not counting. Yep. Okay.
Right. Those externalities are the things that are outside of, you know, you can't, it's not like you don't pay, you know, here's the money for it, right? It's something that's sort of intangible outside, but there is a cost to it. If you try, and I think they actually have done, there are numbers for what is the cost of the loss of a human life. Mm-hmm. And if you were to take those numbers and start assigning them and then incorporate 8 million deaths due to air pollution from burning fossil fuels, all of a sudden those fossil fuels aren't so cheap anymore.
Right. In other words, when you buy a gallon of gas, you're not paying for all the people that are going to die because of the pollution that came from burning that gallon of gas, right?
Right.
Which is not in that transaction. It's external to that transaction. Yeah.
Exactly. And the healthcare is an enormous part of our economy, and there's more finances going toward treating climate change victims right now, right? So if we didn't have to treat as many climate change victims, we would be saving some money on health costs.
Mm-hmm.
And so this. There was a report that, but the Wall Street Journal wrote about a group of people that got together. It includes 15 past chairs of the Council of Economic Advisors, former Federal Reserve Bank chairs Paul Volcker, Alan Greenspan, Ben Bernanke, and Janet Yellen, and 27 Nobel Prize laureates in economics, right? So this
That's is a heavy hitters.
Yeah, hard-hitting, heavy-hitting group of economists. And they have gotten together to endorse a carbon tax and dividend plan as the best way of combating climate change. And this is a pretty big deal to have this bipartisan group of economists getting out there loud and in front of everyone and saying, we want a carbon tax and dividend plan. That's the best next step. One of the things that they do say is that a carbon tax would correct that serious market failure that currently it lets carbon-based fossil fuels be used without factoring in those externalities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so if we were to remedy this, it would send a powerful price signal to steer us toward a low carbon future. So they're really acknowledging that there's a lot of costs that are going on in terms of using fossil fuels that aren't giving us the right market signal to tell us whether we really want to be using burning fossil fuels the way we are.
Man, I love it. We can sound like economists, right? You said a market signal, market failure, right? I mean, these are words that you would see in your Samuelson economics book, right? Market failure, I think, is when the market doesn't work. Well, obviously, doesn't work as intended, right? It doesn't take into account all the costs. The price signal is, of course, sort of what it sounds like, right? If the price of gasoline goes up, you're going to use less of it, right? So all those words are in these economists' statement, but I mean, it all makes sense. What I keep trying to do is demystify these phrases, right? So that, you know, a price signal is a price, right? A market failure means that we're not, that the transactions we do to buy fossil fuels don't take into account all of the costs. I mean, it's interesting. So what do you think is going to happen with this? 27, Janet Yellen's going to lead the charge up to Capitol Hill?
Yeah, I mean, the direct quote from her is that it's the most cost-effective, equitable, and politically viable climate solution.
Wow.
So she's big on board with it. The other thing that this group of economists pointed out is that even if the United States doesn't get on board with it, but the rest of the world does, well, it actually will push, you know, those countries that have their head stuck in the sand,
right,
it'll push them toward climate action because other countries can impose a tax on incoming goods.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just because I think it's always important to mention, right, we've talked frequently about France and how they tried to do a carbon tax and that was largely met with a lot of,
yellow
protests.
Yellow jackets.
Yeah, the yellow jackets protesting and saying, you can't tax our gas. This is hitting our pockets and we can't afford it. So the plan that they're talking about is that dividend part of the plan is really important, where money would go back to the Americans. And
mm-hmm.
actually, you know, the Americans may initially spend more buying goods because of the carbon tax, but then they might actually get more money than they spent back from the way the plan is set up.
Right.
Well,
I mean, I think that I think many of those economists and former Fed chairs all probably flew off in their private jets to Davos, Switzerland. So I just wanted to throw that in the mix here, that the annual meeting in this beautiful resort town in Switzerland, I've never been there, but I'm told it's beautiful, of Davos is a place where the bigwigs of the world all get together once a year to talk about the future of the economy. And I saw several commentaries. I guess there are 115 private jets that flew into that Swiss town for all these guys to chit-chat, and they're worried about global warming, but they're not really doing much about it. And poor Greta Thunberg is taking the train down from Norway, the carbon frugal train, to talk to the same organization. So, Mariah, let me put you on the spot. Who is Greta Thunberg, and why do we know her name all of a sudden?
Oh my goodness, this amazing 15-year-old girl who has been leading some pretty significant protests against carbon pollution for, I don't know, how long has it been?
It's been mostly schools. She's inspired high schoolers to walk out of classes and strike, right? I mean, that's the thing, the viral kind of thing.
Right. So she did it. I think she did it for like 2 weeks straight for a little while, a while back, and then has been doing it maybe every Friday. She's been walking out of school. Mm-hmm. But her big shining moment, she's inspired, I think, 20,000 people all over the world to do the same. But her big shining moment came when she was speaking at COP
24. Last one, whichever.
Yeah, whatever the most recent one was. And she got up in front of the whole entire conference of the parties and said, basically, you are taking away my livelihood because you're polluting and that you're behaving like irresponsible children. So, really bold and really, really vibrant to get out there and then taking the train to model what she preaches.
And she's going to go down and lecture, I guess, the folks in Davos and tell them. And I guess David Attenborough, famous David Attenborough, got up and gave everybody what for. But the real, sort of the analysis I saw was a question about whether or not these billionaires really give two hoots, right? They're trying to figure out a way to make money off this, and it's not clear that the perspective from Davos is what's going to save us. But I don't know enough about it to get more outraged than that. So I guess I'll just put that little talking point down. Well, Mariah, we will leave it with Greta Thunberg, God bless her, on her way on the train from Oslo to Switzerland. We'll tell everybody, we'll put up link, try and put up links to what we talked about in this show. We're kind of freewheeling here, but we'll put up links. You can listen to the show, find us on the Facebook page at @MassClimateAction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using the various the podcasting applications. And of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts nowadays. We'll close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability. We accept responsibility for the future, and we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And given those three fundamental facts, we must insist that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to us. We'll talk to you again real soon. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Very cool.